Hello, Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of Bulls HQ, a Chicago Bulls podcast on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Thank you for joining me again this week. And though the draft has been run and won, I want to talk about it a little more because in my last show, I recorded a solo show straight after the draft and had a million thoughts flying around my head. But a few days on, I've allowed myself to collect some thoughts, as you probably have yourself too. But importantly, I also want to talk draft with a friend whose opinion I respect more than most. And the reason for that is this man is a self-proclaimed prophet and can see into the future. I am but a man, but he is a visionary and a leader who walks among us. He is Fred Pfeiffer of the Chicago Bullseye Podcast. Fred, how are you doing, mate?
Mark, my friend of years, friend of tears. It's always good to talk to you, brother. From the beautiful continent of Australia to the US, it's what a glorious day it is today.
It's a beautiful day. The draft has been run and won, Fred, and we got ourselves a good player, and I'm sure you're very thrilled to have Coby White joining the Bulls.
I you know what? I spent all night. I haven't slept since the draft has been over. I went all-nighter, watched hours, reams of Coby White tape, and I've seen the light on Coby White. I've come around on him. Grab your Bulls gear. The Exodus is here. I'm coming up with a bunch of sayings. The kid... You know what? In fairness to myself, and anyone who was at Doug Tonis, the legendary Doug Tonis party, will admit this. Within 45 seconds, I did a complete 180 that I was actually leading the room in a Coby chant. So I went from being devastated. Then I saw his interview, and regardless of what you think about the kid as a player, he is impossible not to fall in love with as a human being. And I'd turn around, man. I'm on board the Coby White train, despite the rolling mountains of yesterday.
And I want to bring that up. I want to start the show with this because I thought it was highly amusing to go over this. And you're exactly there's a number of reasons why I wanted to get you on today. And I'm not going to lie, a part of it was so I could give you some good-natured ribbing here about your general Coby White takes. But I do want to talk draft with you more holistically. But I want to fill the listeners into the mind of C. Red Fred. And I'm sure they're well-versed in it anyway. I mean, most people probably follow you on Twitter. But if for whatever reason, the listeners of this show aren't following C. Red Fred or haven't necessarily heard of C. Red Fred, which I do find hard to believe, I want to give them a bit of an insight as to just to the way your mind ticks over, and in particular with Coby White, the latest Chicago Bull. But I want to take you back to May 28th, Fred. And you had a tweet here, and I'm pretty sure you actually said this on my podcast too, maybe a month or so ago, but it was May 28th, and you had this gem of a tweet, and I'll read it to you, all right?
Are you sure?
This one says, Coby White shot worse from the college three last season than Chris Dunn did from the pro three-point line. White averaged less assists in college than Dunn did his last two seasons for the Bulls. White will never be the defender that Dunn is. Let's hope a team takes White ahead of us. So that was your initial tweet on May 28th, and clearly not a fan of Coby White. And I've just pulled up a few responses from this tweet that you got. And one guy here, he messaged you back and said, I think Carson Edwards is better than Coby White. And to that, you said, I agree 100%. One day we'll all look back and agree. And another reply I had to this tweet, or to your tweet, and this one's genius. When we get White, how are you going to spin this tweet, Fred? To which you said, no. I won't spin drafting White. I'm not impressed with the tape I've seen. His two best skills are his ability to push and make free throws, not lottery worthy in my opinion. Now, that is amusing when you sort of combine that with your tweet that you had yesterday and after the draft. And to your credit, you mentioned it before, so this came just after the draft. I did a full 180 turnaround on White after that interview. I'm on board. Long live the Red Leviathan.
You gotta admit, man, that's some impressive dancing, brother. You
gotta admit. You're quick on your feet, I'll give you that.
Well, every day I try to become better as a human and a basketball analyst.
Right.
The one solace I had in the interim of that tweet, I generally had the idea that guys do not have massive improvements from the three-point line. And I looked at Colin Sexton's numbers.
Yeah.
You know, it was amazing the jump that guy made. He went from a 33%, I think, three-point shooter in college to the next year shooting 40-plus from the NBA three-point range. So, and then also I heard our good mutual friend Ricky O'Donnell mention that he had just out-of-this-world numbers on a catch-and-shoot, which obviously is a little bit easier than off the dribble. He's going to see a lot of catch-and-shoot next to Zach LaVine. You know, in fairness to myself, I think I did mention that he was extremely quick. He did push the ball.
You did.
Yeah, and there were obviously, knowing who our coach is, I didn't, you know, that's not a great fit, right? Well, then Pax gets in front of the mic, and I believe everything Pax says. And
yes, he did.
He did state that they're going to run the ball a lot more. It was clear he has an understanding of today's modern game. And I kind of view Jim as a guy who's going to listen to what his superiors say and make them happy, do his best to make them happy. Which
are
I
you
think
calling him a yes man?
Well, I wouldn't say he's a yes man, but as Casey Johnson said, I think Casey Johnson put it, he's eager to please.
Right.
And
right.
To that end, I think he is going to push the ball. I think that the Bulls are going to play at a much faster pace. I think we saw that last year when they had the personnel to do it. They played at a much faster pace outside of that disaster in December. I still don't know what was going on there. But, you know, regardless, February came. I became a much happier man, and the season ended with, you know, a G League team. This year is going to be a much better season. And I don't think Coby White's starting. Like, I'd be shocked if I had talked to a couple people who were like, oh, we got our – new starting point guard. I don't think that's remotely true. I think it's I would be shocked if they don't sign a veteran point guard. I'd be shocked if they don't go after Patrick Beverley. And I think that's the right thing to do when we're talking about a 19-year-old point guard.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'll be extremely surprised, and I'll actually be quite disappointed if they don't have a maybe not a great starting caliber point guard, but at least a stopgap solution, whether that's Patrick Beverley or Corey Joseph or Darren Collison, whatever the name is. It'll always ultimately come down to cost, but I'll be quite disappointed if they don't have some sort of veteran backup point guard or someone who'll play backup minutes, maybe like 20, 25 minutes, depending on that player. And I'll be annoyed if Coby White is sort of put into that starting role, because I don't want to see Coby White get done like they did Chris Dunn, where they had, you know, just throwing a young kid into the Wolves, or to the Wolves rather, and just sort of having not much experience or not much support behind him. I think that would be a complete mistake.
Yeah. And to get off the topic as quick as possible, since I don't want you to read any more tweets.
I've got more, but yeah, we'll go on.
I do want to see. I had an interesting conversation with our mutual friend Kevin Anderson on this topic. I'd love to get your opinion.
Okay.
So what is a fair price for Patrick Beverley? I think we're both in agreement. I hope we are, that to me, he's the guy who checks the most boxes. He's the perfect fit. Next to Zach LaVine, I think LaVine's a little bit more ball dominant. You don't need a guy who's ball dominant at the point guard position on the Bulls. Next to Zach LaVine, Beverley plays great defense. He can shoot the ball. I think he's a perfect fit, and he's very versatile as a defender. What do you pay for Patrick Beverley? What is too much for Patrick Beverley?
Yeah, well, I think for me, too much is probably like $10 million. Like, ultimately, the Bulls have quite a few holes. So you can't afford to go out there and give Patrick Beverley, you know, $14 or $15 million, which is the number that's been sort of put out there now. I think Bobby Marks said it on Zach Lowe's podcast that's potentially what he's hearing Patrick Beverley may be signing for in the offseason. And to me, that's probably way too much. I think a two-year $10 million deal, or even a three-year $30 million deal with that third year being non-guaranteed or partially guaranteed, I think that makes most sense. But anything beyond 2 years and an annual salary of $10 million, then I'm probably out on. What are you thinking?
I agree that when we talk about 3 years, I think that's a little bit too long. Yeah. I suggest go high end, 2 years at $16 million per year with a team option for a third year. And the reason why is, I understand, everybody calm down. I understand it's probably more than what you wanted to pay for Patrick Beverley, but I would counter is, you know, I understand Otto Porter Jr. is making probably more than you want to pay him. Otto Porter Jr. is probably, if anyone thinks logically, is probably making about $7 million more than he should market value. I would estimate if he was an unrestricted free agent, he'd get somewhere between 17 and 20. somewhere around there, maybe 17 and 22. Mm-hmm. So he's over anywhere from $7 to $10 million.
Yeah.
What people factor in is that Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. are making a combined 10.5. I think we all can agree that they're well underpaid based on their production. Zach LaVine's making $19 million. I know that angered many last summer. I think that contract's a bargain now based on what a player of his ilk will be, you know, returning. So the Bulls don't have a ton of guys that are overpaid. If you're trying to find a veteran to set the tone, to set toughness, to set defense first, to have that mentality that you want, I don't think it's fine overpaying a guy $3 or $4 or $5 million over the next 2 years, because we're in a rebuild still. We're not going to be getting any major free agents. There aren't any great free agents in the next year. Regardless, I know you love Draymond Green, but I'm not paying a max deal for Draymond Green. I think what we need to keep our powder keg dry is for, the following summer. I am totally fine with overpaying for Patrick Beverley in the next 2 years. And I do disagree with you when you say we need a lot more. I don't. I think you need one guy who can play the four or five, if it's Taj Gibson or Ed Davis and Patrick Beverley. And then what else do you need? You have, if you go through it, get Patrick Beverley, you throw him at the starting position. You got LaVine at the two, Otto Porter at the three. You have Lauri at the four, Wendell Carter at the five. Then your backup is Chris Dunn, who is could play guard anyone. He's a very versatile defender. You got Kobe White as your backup point guard also. You have Denzel Valentine. You have Chandler Hutchinson. You have, if it's Ed Davis, Todd Gibson. I mean, you're already 10 deep there. What else do you want?
Well, you need another wing, I think. I think there's no way you can, and this will probably hurt your ears, but there's no way you can bank on Denzel Valentine based on the fact that he just missed on a year. There's no way he can factor into this calculation as being dependable based on his injury history. So whilst I kind of get what you're understanding, I understand that point of view. There's no way I can sort of budget him in there and just expect 20 minutes from Denzel for 82 games. I can't do that after the year.
Why not Wayne Selden Jr.?
I definitely want to bring back Wayne Selden Jr., but you'll need some cap space to do that potentially, depending on how much he's sort of offered out there. But I guess Antonio Blakeney's on the books too, and I don't want to see him playing another minute at all, even though he's contracted. No, so I think you need a wing. I think you need that starting point guard. I think you need that, forward center that you talked about, which is Taj. But it really depends on Daniel Gafford to an extent as to whether he's ready to go straight away. Because if he is, I suppose he could be your backup center. But really, essentially what the Bulls would be doing at that point would be committing to a center rotation that doesn't have a lot of experience in Wendell Carter Jr., who only played the 44 games last year, and Daniel Gafford, who of course would be a rookie. I mean, that's a lot of inexperience to have in your front court. And I don't know if they need a veteran center of sorts, maybe a cheap one. I wouldn't be going out there and paying decent dollars for a veteran backup center, but particularly if you can get Taj and you can slide him to center. But I think they do need another wing, definitely. Wings don't come cheap, whether that's Wayne Selden or someone else. They definitely need that point guard. But I don't know, $16 million for Patrick Beverley. I get your logic as to overpaying for the 2 years rather than spreading it over 3 years. I agree with that. But maybe, at least to me, overpaying means $12 million, not $16 million. I think that's too far.
Mm. So Zach LaVine, I do want to go back to Zach LaVine because I think he's one of the most polarizing players in Bulls Twitterverse. And I like to get your opinion on this because I know I did lose my mind when the Hawks traded up for DeAndre Hunter. And I just did as a way to get back at the Hawks to move up to three by offering Zach LaVine and seven to move up to three for Dennis Smith Jr. and number three. And then we'll say Hunter and then turn at a Hawks and say pound sand, at which point they'd probably take, I guess, RJ Barrett and laugh at me. But I was only kind of quasi joking there because it would free up quite a bit of cap space. I think we'd have $33 million at that point. And then the reaction, though, was so weird to that statement. Like, some people were just apoplectic with me, you moron. And other people were like, I love this idea. And I just realized, oh my God, is there a player on more, even now, after what I thought was a pretty darn good year, that brings more? And then even here, Ricky O'Donnell was advocating that trade for, I think it was, what was it, four and Zach for four and Ball, which I wouldn't have done in a million years. What say you, Zach LaVine? Where do you stand?
Well, I mean, I had the tweets queued up, but I wasn't going to bring them up because I didn't want to do you again. But, I mean, seeing as that you brought it up, I mean, it's only fair that I touch on this topic. But going back to the draft day as well, I mean, look, you brought it up, so I'm just going to go through it. Again, taking the listeners into the mindset of C. Red Fred. So this tweet came through just before the draft, and it was a typical C. Red Fred tweet. And it reads a little something like this. It says, steps to the Red Leviathan status. 1, draft DeAndre Hunter. 2, trade every second round pick for the rest of time to move up and get Carson Edwards. 3, sign Patrick Beverley. Unleash the monster. So in a lot of ways, we've just captured in one tweet what we've just spent the last 15 minutes talking about. But then sort of looping that in into your despair when you saw DeAndre Hunter go up to number 4 to the Atlanta Hawks. This next tweet came in maybe an hour later, something like that. It says, oh my God, Atlanta moved up to get Hunter. All my nightmares have come true. And of course, I love that. I absolutely adore that tweet. And 20 minutes later, this is the tweet you were talking about. You said, hey, Knicks, how about Zach LaVine and number 7 for number 3 and Dennis Smith Jr.? We'll take Hunter and tell Atlanta to pound sand. So that's the tweet you were referencing. And you were clearly disappointed when DeAndre Hunter went number 4. But back to your question about the whole LaVine thing and that proposed idea that you had in a moment's lunacy, I think that would be absolutely a crazy idea. And I think you mentioned it to me in a direct message on Twitter too. And I think my exact words are, I think it's nuts or something of that nature. So I'm going to repeat that, Fred. I think that is a nuts trade. There is no way I would ever do that for DeAndre Hunter for the Bulls to take him at 3. I think it's crazy. I mentioned it on my last podcast that Atlanta was a team that I was kind of sort of somewhat jealous of in how they were rebuilding, and to some degree I still am, but I was very happy to see them trade multiple assets to go up and grab DeAndre Hunter. That brought me a lot of joy for a number of reasons, but to see or to know what your reaction was going to be. So I would have not have done that LaVine deal. That was a terrible idea from you.
Let's take a step back so I can explain to the listeners my thinking here. I've watched all these guys hours and hours of tape. The best thing about this draft was that Virginia and North Carolina and all these teams and Duke, all these great teams with the vast majority of the highest prospects in this draft all were in, you know, basically the same conference in the ACC, or they played each other. Obviously, Texas Tech played Virginia. So DeAndre Hunter played all these guys. And the more I watched him, I just fell in love with this guy. His defensive versatility is – I haven't seen anything like it. I mean, he would get switched off on a guard. They would throw him on Jared Culver. He shut down Jared Culver. He was on Kobe White quite a bit, shut him down a lot.
Did you see that time when he got really blocked by Zion in the corner? Do you remember that?
So that's the one thing that I think that people use. He's got a slow – everybody brings up that one, but – his release is fine. He's a 52% shooter. I think without a doubt, when all said and done, DeAndre Hunter will be the second best player in this draft. I have like zero doubts on that. And if I haven't really been proclaiming this, but there's only one team that I think in the next 4 or 5 years, I think Embiid's going to break down physically. The team that does worry me is Atlanta, because I do think that, I like some of the stuff they're doing. But my one saving grace was, well, they got Trae Young, who's fantastic offensively, but my God, that guy's a disaster defensively. And the more I watched Hunter, in the back of my mind, I just kept on saying, God, I hope Atlanta doesn't get DeAndre Hunter. I just see him cleaning up all the mess. Any pick and roll, you put Trae Young on their worst defender, and if you do a pick and roll, as long as DeAndre Hunter's on the other side, he'll be able to pick up any point guard. He's that good. And lo and behold, they trade their assets to move up and get him. And it was funny. I was on with Waddle and Sylvie like literally about 2 hours before that trade, and Sylvie asked me, is there anything that would upset you that happens today? And I literally said, I go, Yeah, I will lose my mind if Atlanta takes their assets and moves up and takes DeAndre Hunter ahead of us. I've been going on DeAndre Hunter like PR tour for weeks, and the only guy who agreed with me is Kaplan. And to the point when it happened, when I heard about it on the radio, I was driving down. I literally had to pull off to the side of the road, and I just started screaming expletives.
Oh,
just
beautiful.
I was so upset.
That's fantastic.
That gives you a little background.
I mean, it's music to my ears. It really is. But I mean,
I'm sure you enjoyed it. I'm sure you. But when I said, hey, am I losing my mind? Am I nuts here? Because I'm not kidding, Mark, you would not believe the amount of people who are like, I like this idea. I like this idea. Because then you get your point guard, Dennis Smith Jr., and then you free up space to go get an unrestricted free agent. It was insane in retrospect, because I think we both appreciate Zach LaVine a little bit more as a player than most people do. But you do sense he's kind of polarizing.
LaVine is definitely a polarizing figure on this Bulls team. Look, we'll go into a bit more detail in a second, but let's just take a quick break. We'll touch on LaVine a little bit more after this.
What's up, Blue Wire listeners? This is Jack from the Real _ Sports Podcast, a Snapchat sports pod. We recently ranked as the number one sports podcast on all of iTunes, all of Apple. We cover all things from the NBA draft, from NBA free agency. We're working on MLB this summer, as well as the NFL offseason. Catch me and my co-host Abe on the Real _ Sports Podcast, a Snapchat sports pod, a part of the wonderful Blue Wire Podcast Network.
All right, back to Zach LaVine now. He is certainly that polarizing player. It's kind of odd, and I think bringing it back to Kobe White too, I think a lot of people are concerned with the fit with LaVine and White, and I'm to a degree, I sort of am, probably more so defensively than I am offensively. But yeah, I mean, Zach LaVine is that super polarizing player, because most view him as that negative player where he'll get you a lot of points. He'll do that efficiently, but he'll freeze you out, or he'll freeze out a lot of his teammates potentially. He won't pass the ball, and then on defense he's giving up a lot of points too. And I guess I kind of agree with that assessment of Zach LaVine last season when he was coming back from his ACL. But I mean, this season, I just can't imagine this previous bull season without Zach LaVine. You take him off the roster and I don't know, you put in some average shooting guard. I can't imagine this Bulls team being any better, given their clear need for someone on the perimeter to do anything of note, which the Bulls desperately need. And I guess Kobe White will add a little bit to that. But I think the Zach LaVine hate, to a degree, whilst it's cooled off some, and I think it was fair to have some critiques about him at the start of last season, or even during that offseason when he signed that deal, I think now it should be tempered somewhat, but that rage sort of still lives on, because I guess he is that polarizing type of player.
Yeah, it's frustrating to me, just because I do like, there's people I really respect and like, you know, Coach Ron. I know our mutual friend Coach Ron. Yeah, I mean, the guy just, he can't stand Zach LaVine. I get confused as to why these smart people harbor such ill feelings towards him, because to me it's so readily apparent. He's like one of the few guys that, on the Bulls, and there's not many in the league that can get their shot anywhere on the court. You watch these playoffs, you have to have guys like that. When the shot clock gets down to, you know, four or five, he'll get a shot anywhere. You know, he'll rise up and get his shot. So you need a guy like that, and I think he can absolutely be a cornerstone or a part of a team that wins a title. And I agree. Now, not the best, not the number one guy, but absolutely two or three.
Yeah. I mean, 100%, I totally agree with that. But just going back to something you said a little bit earlier, where you didn't necessarily think the Bulls needed that other wing. If that was the case, why were you so in on DeAndre Hunter if you think they're sort of set on the wing?
Well, I don't think you can have enough of those guys. So that was another common refrain I heard. Well, he's Otto Porter Jr. He just plays the same position as Otto Porter Jr. and he's basically the same player. Number one, I don't agree with that. I think DeAndre Hunter has a higher ceiling than Otto Porter Jr. I think his ceiling is Kawhi. That's how good I think DeAndre Hunter could be. They're very similar physically. People act like he confuses a reluctance to over dribble with an inability to dribble. The kid can absolutely dribble. I don't, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole again because I know, like I said, Dave Kaplan and I are alone on DeAndre Hunter Island. I think he's going to be a great player. I do. So you can't have enough of those guys, Mark. You can't have enough of those guys. That's where the league is heading. Having guys
that are
long, that can switch and hit threes is going to be in vogue going forward till the end of time. So if you have five of those on a roster, then you're going to win a title. Right. So I don't think you can say just because my point was, hey, you know, we don't need them. Or what was your point? I lost track my train of thought. I'm so angry.
I said, and you're correct in the sense that the Bulls could have definitely needed a player like DeAndre Hunter, and that's why I want them to bring in another wing in free agency. But initially on the pod, you said that they don't need another wing because they've got Valentine and Chandler Hutchinson. So I'm just trying to clarify the point because you're clearly in on DeAndre Hunter, but you're also sort of okay once Hunter went off the board that the Bulls sort of go after Culver and wanted him to sort of fall to number seven and wanted the Minnesota Timberwolves to desperately take Coby White at six. So I'm just trying to clarify the point, I suppose.
Yeah, I admit I was a little bit – I wasn't thinking clearly over the last few weeks when it came to anyone else but DeAndre Hunter. I think that really shaded my thoughts on a lot of things. Like, I like Culver, but I didn't like him as much as Hunter. I viewed Culver as a poor man's Hunter. It's just – I just loved Hunter so much and fell in love with him. It ruined – almost the way I looked at any other player, including Coby White. Coby White, after watching tape last night, and I did say he's just super, super quick and he's going to push the ball. Like I said, it's almost to the point after watching these interviews, reading his article on the Players Tribune, like you have something seriously wrong with you if you can't cheer for this kid. Seeing the way he reacted when he heard Johnson was drafted, his teammate was drafted.
Yeah.
I mean, he's clearly a special kid. I'm as someone, you know, who went through several years ago the pain of losing a parent to cancer, this kid's a teenager. He was a teenager. I was an adult and I know how difficult it was. He was a teenager. He loses his father and he's under the bright lights of playing basketball in North Carolina. I mean, I don't know if you know anything about this kid and you have problems with and you can't not so angry about the Bulls you're not willing to cheer for Coby White. Like I said, I don't know what's wrong with you. So, you know, at this point, that's the way I kind of feel. It's like, all right, you know what? I said all these incorrect things. And I'm glad we got him now. And I feel like he does fit. And at seven, like I was having this discussion, who would you have rather taken? You know, after I had it, I wanted to go after last night, I kind of had it ranked. I had Hunter number one. And after that, Darius Garland. And after that, Culver. And then after that, I was like, I don't care who we get, right? I guess White is the best choice after that. Or was there someone else that you were internally arguing about? Was it Clark?
Yeah, I was literally about to say Brandon Clark's probably going to be maybe the steal of the draft, one of them. I mean, it's hard to say at this point because, I mean, as is often the case, someone will come out of nowhere and end up being a really great player. But I think Brandon Clark would be the name that I would have said. But, I mean, realistically, the Bulls could have got him too. Potentially, if they went to OKC and maybe took a pick or took that pick off their hands for a salary dump or something like that. But assuming Brandon Clark isn't the pick and it was one of those guys that were taken in that sort of 8 to 12 range, I wouldn't rather have any of them over Coby White. And maybe that's wrong of me to say. Maybe that will be proven wrong in time. Maybe Cam Reddish sort of comes out of nowhere and proves to be better than what his lone season at Duke showed us he can be. And I didn't want Jackson Hayes. I didn't want another center on the roster. Yeah. I had no – I mean, Rui Hachimura at number nine I think is one of the worst picks in this draft. I think he can be an okay player, but to take him at number nine I thought was insane by the Wizards. Agreed. So yeah. I guess maybe the only other one that I had some mild interest in was Sekou Doumbouya, but I mean – I'm not losing sleep over it, at least right now, based on what we know now. Maybe if he fulfills his potential, but I like White. I gave the draft pick a B+. You know, when the Bulls sort of, I guess, made the pick. I don't think it's a perfect fit. I don't think it's a perfect pick. I think it's a solid one. But I'm happy with getting a player that I'm confident can at least be a good player. And I said this on my last show, but the Bulls just need good players. I don't think they have enough of them, and just amassing a collection of good players is what this roster sort of needs right now. And to have a player like White, who who does fit next to LaVine to a degree and does play a modern style of basketball and does things that this team hasn't had a point guard for so long, I'm pretty happy with how it sort of turned out.
What about the second round picks? I was with the Queen of Bulls Twitter, Romina and Keith Franz and a couple other people when that pick came up and Bol Bol's still on board. And I personally heard a lot, you know, Bol, no doubt the guy's an immensely talented, skilled player, but number one, he's not obviously durable. And number two, he doesn't have the work ethic, according to every scout that I heard talk about him, or the love of the game. I mean, right there, those are huge, huge red flags for me about a player when, you know, people are questioning their motor. Those guys rarely ever end up becoming anything because that's the heart of what you need. So were you upset with that pick? Did you like that pick? I'd love to get your opinion on that.
Yeah, I mean, I probably wouldn't normally take a center with a second round pick, whether it's Gafford or someone else, because I mean, you can just get them very easily. And I probably wouldn't have done that if I was the Bulls. I probably, ideally, if that was me, I wouldn't have taken Gafford. I probably would have taken Talen Horton-Tucker or someone like that at more of a project piece. But I think with that second round, unless you're getting like a super experienced player who can contribute, like a Carson Edwards, someone like that, then I'd probably take a risk on a project. So I kind of get why people are upset about not taking Bol, and I get that idea, but I was never a Bol fan. I definitely wanted no part of it at number seven, but as he sort of slid to 44, I understand the justification as to why you would take a swing on Bol Bol at 44, because that would potentially be insane value if he sort of does reach his upside. But at the same time, I wasn't too disappointed with it because I just don't see Bol amounting to much, because you mentioned the health concerns. The fact that he's 208 pounds as a center, I mean, that's just problematic. So I wasn't too upset about it, but I understand why people are.
So why did Gafford, I haven't heard a good explanation why he fell. He was a projected lottery pick last year and in a much better draft. Now he's a second-round pick. What were the reasons for his precipitous fall? Have you heard them? What are they?
I think it's a similar situation to Robert Williams last year where – if I'm not mistaken, Robert Williams, the reason why he slid down the draft board. But for Gafford, I think it was just he was meant to come out last year, was potentially a top 20, top 25 pick, or at least a first-round pick. But he went back to school for whatever reason, didn't necessarily put up better numbers, didn't necessarily show anything new. And because of that, and because of, I guess the center position generally is becoming less in vogue than what it was, you know, a couple of years ago, let alone 5-10 years ago, I think that probably explains as to why he sort of slid. I mean, even Goga Padazzi, I mean, he fell from sort of that 6-8 range or 6-10 range, and he's fell all the way to 18. So centers generally aren't doing well these days, and I guess that's why Gafford was there for the Bulls at 38.
So what did you think of that Ringer article? I don't know if you read that article. The 2019 draft highlighted the art of building around I can't remember, something to that title. And one of the quotes I had highlighted on Twitter, I don't know if you saw this, was White will be the rare rookie point guard taken in the lottery who starts his NBA career with a lot of talent around him, end quote. Do you agree with that statement or do you disagree with it?
I think the Bulls have a lot of offensive talent around them for sure. I mean, this can be, assuming they do get out and run, like we sort of said from the top, assuming Boylan allows them to do that, I think they do have the offensive potential in certain lineups to be putting up some serious numbers. Like we said from the top, I don't think White will start, and I don't think he should start. I think easing him in as a bench guy, I think that probably makes sense as having him as a combo guard off the bench. That's ideally the role I want him to be in, but there are going to be units when you can put him out there with Zach LaVine, Otto Porter, Lauri Markkanen, or Wendell Carter, or maybe even go even smaller where you have Lauri at the five and Porter at the four, something like that. I mean, there is offensive potential for the Bulls to have these five-man units where they can score a lot of points. It'll be just, I guess, the biggest question I have is defensively, because White isn't much of a defender. And during that February run that everyone likes to reference, where the Bulls were playing their best basketball last season, their defense was just absolutely terrible. I think they were bottom five in defensive rating. They may have been 25th actually off the top of my head. So that's what I'm more concerned about than the offense. I think there's going to be a chance here, assuming Boylan allows for it. And Pax, to his credit, post the draft sort of said that along with Chris Fleming, he's expecting Boylan to sort of modernize the offense and get out there and run up. I think if they do that, there's definitely going to be lineups out there that can run and can score points pretty quickly.
And I also counter, I think there's a lineup of White, Dunn at the two, Chandler Hutchinson at the three, Otto Porter Jr. at the four, and Wendell Carter Jr. at the five that will be very good defensively. Very good. And I think there are options. Finally, we have a team where you can decide to play, you know, defense first, a little combo or a little bit all offense. And there are a lot more options now with the talent that they've assembled. And I really am sensing a change in the tone. I know I love to joke with you that you're my counter, but I think deep down you do skew positive as much as you want to fight it. And it's rampant throughout the fan base. It's just a rampant negativity for the past several years, maybe rightly so, maybe not. But I think there is a turn. I've seen it after this draft, and I think in the tenor of the reaction, and I think there's a lot of hope now all of a sudden about the beloved Bowl. And I think things are starting to, in terms of the fan base view of the team, definitely look a lot rosier. Do you agree with my assessment?
I mean, it depends on what the individual fan really wants and what their ultimate goals are in following sports. I mean, I'm coming at this, looking at this team, and I'm not expecting a championship. I don't see a top 10 player on this roster. I know you disagree with that. I don't see a top 5 potential player. I don't see this Chicago Bulls team in its current iteration based on where these players are potentially projecting as players to be a championship contender. So I'm not coming at it looking at it from that point of view. So I don't have that title or bust mentality. So I think ideally if this core can sort of stay together and can grow together and actually, you know, become good NBA players on both sides of the ball, I think they could be a 50-win team. And if they do that and they're fun to watch, then I'll be happy to see that if that's the peak of what this team will be. But, I mean, ultimately, I'm not too concerned about the players on this roster. I think GarPacks generally do a pretty good job of bringing players in. It's just more the more holistic things that bother me, whether it's, you know, selling second rounders for cash or what Boylan was doing last season. It's more about the things that happen away from the floor that bother me than what is necessarily happening on the floor from a player skills point of view, because I'm not coming at this expecting the Bulls to dominate and win a championship anytime soon. I'm not expecting Zach LaVine to be that sort of top 10 offensive player or something stupid like that. I just don't have that view. So it ultimately depends on your expectations. Mine may not be as high as someone else's. So maybe my, you know, that baseline as to how far we can fall. I just don't have that, although that expectation.
I think with the Butler trade, that was the low point, the nadir or whatever for the tenor of the fan base. And from that point forward, even the good moves were just, still, I'd say the majority were negative on it. So, you know, Butler drafting Markkanen, absolutely a negative reaction. Trading Butler in itself was a negative reaction. And then all the major moves after that, you know, not moving up, taking Wendell Carter Jr., signing Zach LaVine, Bobby Portis trade for Otto Porter Jr., all negative. Everything was negative. Only the holiday trade, I'd say, was a majority positive. Signing Parker, obviously, all those. And then this is the first one where I was kind of surprised when they drafted White. I was expecting a definitely listening to the Chicago radio like I do. I was expecting a lot more negative. And it's absolutely, I think, skewed significantly positive, which I've been pleasantly surprised about. So I don't know. I'm just sensing a much more positive tone and a belief that this team is special. I have a really close friend who's a Golden State expert and followed that team for many years, and he keeps on telling me about Curry in 2012. Like, no one saw Curry becoming what he was, or even Clay in 2012, and when they lost in the first round in 2014, did he have any inclination that those guys were going to become, you know, top 10, top 20 players? And he's like, no. You know, there was still overall a lot of questions, a lot of disbelief in this team. I kind of feel it's the same way with Markkanen. I think it's the same way with Wendell Carter Jr. Nobody expects these guys to be top 10, top 20 players, but then it happens. You know, it just happens usually in year three, usually in year four. Nobody expected Siakam to be as good as he was this year in year three. Certainly not Draymond Green. He admitted that in a post game. It just happens. So that's what I get excited about. Of course, we don't see Laurie as top 10 yet. You know,
well, you do.
I do. Yeah, we got profit, Mark. I've got that ability. Cool. The Red Sea parts, you know. But I think most people don't. Like, I think most people, where do you think Larry is going to max out at as a player right now? Probably what, top 25, top 30? Is that where you see him?
Yeah, I think he probably could be like a top 30 player, maybe like something like that. I'm not on the lower side of that. And in the same way we think about, you know, Kevin Love or Al Horford or players like that, where, you know, they're 2-3-time All-Stars, something like that. Maybe, I don't know, obviously those two players, maybe Kevin Love has probably been a little bit more accomplished. I think there was a point there when people thought Kevin Love as a top 10 player. So absolutely. I don't know. I don't know what the comparison is, the right comparison, but I think Lowry could potentially top out as a top 30 player, but Zach LaVine, top 50, Wendell Carter, top 50, but I don't see a top 10, top 15 guy. But that's me. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I think, though, it's swung around that you are at least seeing, oh, my gosh, this team does have an interesting collection of talent, all 26 and under, and with a few interesting free agent signings like that we had in 2010, there could be a significant jump to competitive playoff status and maybe beyond if, most importantly, Laurie makes that jump and LaVine makes a jump, and especially Wendell Carter Jr., who I know you love. And I think we all expect some type of jump. It just could be.
Yeah, I'm certainly expecting a jump. I'm not expecting playoffs. What I spoke about before was what I imagine this sort of core as a unit being the peak of. I don't expect them to necessarily get there next season, but I think based on, you know, the players that they've sort of amassed already, you know, budgeting in a couple decent role players, I think this team, we should be looking at least a 32 to 35 win team. That's what I'm hoping for. I'm not expecting a playoff performance. So again, going back to expectations, I'm not expecting that. So I won't be disappointed next season if the Bulls don't make the playoffs. Obviously, if they have another repeat season of last year where they win 22 or 25 games or something like that, that will disappoint me greatly because I'm expecting around that 30 win mark at least. But it all comes back to expectations, and I think that's where the message gets lost. And ultimately, we probably mostly, and just generally as Bulls fans, we probably agree on 80-85% of things. It's hard to talk about it online because the character limit on Twitter at least is it's too limiting, I suppose. And sometimes even the best of us can go off the rails, as someone that I'm talking to on this podcast has been known to do.
Well, it's a win-win for you because if we have a great season, we're all going to have a lot of fun. And if we have a bad season, I am going to be devastated, Mark. I will be a basket kid. If we win 35 or under, you will never – C-Red will not even approach what you've seen for the last 5 years, because I will begin to question everything I believe. If we're healthy, right? I mean, if we have six injuries to rotation players like last season, I mean, no one can beat that, can overcome that. But if we're healthy and we win 35 or less, I'm going to be extremely disappointed. So it's a win-win for you, brother.
It's always a win-win. I like to set it up for myself, like to cover all bases, as I did this year with our bet. We'll talk about our bet for the upcoming season, maybe on a future podcast, but I very much doubt seeing you ever turning away from the Red Leviathan and questioning your stance with anything with Bulls related. But I look forward to the day should that happen. I mean, that will be, like you said, a win-win for me. But I appreciate you coming on, my friend. Thank you for sharing me your draft thoughts, your draft takeaways. I would love to hear a basketball story, actually. I was wrapping it up, but I definitely want to hear a basketball story.
All right, I'll give you one last basketball story. You know what? I haven't – only my closest friends or anyone who was in the gym when this happened knows this story. I decided to go public with it because I think there's a greater good in this.
So, go ahead.
Sophomore basketball year, playing Phillips, St. Lawrence versus Phillips. I made this incredible steal. I was a shooting guard, and it was I can't describe how incredible this play was. Jumped the passing lane, had a breakaway, and I couldn't dunk. Like, I could touch the rim, but I couldn't dunk. But at that moment, I really felt like I was building the momentum.
You had some little bit more air in the shoes.
Air in the shoes, right, to dunk. So when you're thinking you're going to dunk and you're not really concentrating on what's happening behind you. So I went up, you know, I kind of slowed down a little bit, got myself together, ready to go up for the dunk. And this kid who I stole the ball basically from, who the pass was intended to, had sprinted full speed and dove and hit the ball at such an exceptional speed that he tipped it. And the way I was winding up with my knee to go up for the dunk put a tremendous amount of force on the ball. Now, unfortunately, the gym did not see the ball hit by the player. It looked as though I literally was dribbling and dribbled the ball directly off my knee, which sent it going into the stands at about 75 to 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And it hit a woman, I swear to God, an older woman.
I think you've told me this story before.
Oh, I did. Okay, never mind that. But she was yelling in the gym. All right, we'll end it. Yeah, so.
I mean, you're getting a little bit on in your years, so I understand why you may have forgotten telling me that one. But you pretty much knocked out that old lady with the ball, right? That's what happened.
Okay, I can't believe I told you that story. I totally forgot about it. All right, well, maybe I did tell it.
I mean, I'm glad I heard it again. I mean, I feel for that old lady. Hopefully she's okay, but it's still a funny story, I suppose.
Maybe I am getting old because I'm forgetting what stories I have.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll have another one for the next one. I'm surprised I told you that one. I tried to keep that under wraps.
Yeah. I think it may have been early in the year or even last year, but I definitely recall. I'll definitely recall that great story. But anyways, thank you for reiterating and sharing again. But thank you for coming on. I wish I was there with you yesterday and seeing your live reactions of when DeAndre Hunter was effectively traded up to the Atlanta Hawks. I wanted to see you begging the Bulls not to take Coby White. I wanted to see your complete 180 when he became a Bull. I wanted to see it all, but unfortunately, our continents being so far apart, it wasn't possible. But Fred, one day we will share a draft day together. But like I said, thank you for coming on the show, and we'll get you back on after free agency at some stage.
Talk to you later, my man. Always enjoyable. Take it easy.
All right, folks, so that just about does it for this episode of Bulls HQ. Thanks again to Fred for jumping on Bulls HQ this week. Follow him on Twitter if you're not already doing it. I'm sure you are, but do it anyway at CBE Fred on Twitter. Listen to Chicago Bulls Eye Podcast. I'm sure Fred will have some amazing post-draft takes coming on his show then. But thank you again for tuning into Bulls HQ. We'll probably be back later in the week talking free agency and looking ahead as to what the Bulls options potentially are in free agency. Be on the lookout for that one. In the interim, follow me on Twitter at MK Hoops. Follow the show on Twitter too at Bulls HQ Pod. 5-star reviews on iTunes. But we'll be back again later in the week. Speak to you all then, Bulls fans.